Morning, Che. We are good. Thanks. And how are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm fine.
Morning, everyone.
I'm fine. Compliments of the new year. As much as now the year is a month old, but there is my face. My apologies for whatever. It's because where I am, I've got a problem of connectivity. So I had to quickly dash out so that I'm in a place where I am then going to be able to hear and direct the meeting. My apologies. Then you won't be able to see my face. I hope we are coming back well, fully geared up for our work. It has not been an easy period. We are in the half of our term, which is going to be
recording
very challenging,
in progress.
Which is going to be very challenging in terms of our concentration, our focus, and because of a number of things that are a challenge in our country. Among others, is the high rate of unemployment. Among others, it's all the things that are, you hear, you are told it's burning there tomorrow. As activists, because all of us here are activists, we ought to be a concern, but our primary responsibility is to ensure that the Department of Employment and Labour, led by the Ministry, is then accounting. It is then able to reflect to us why other things are not being able to be achieved, and those that are achieved, it's because of ABCD, because I think they do have that responsibility. And ours, if I've always said, and I will say it, is that it's not them and us. Together we have got the responsibility of ensuring that the mandates that they are given, they are able to carry that out. And as the mandates that we are given, as per the constitution of our country, among others, and the rules of parliament, is to ensure that we conduct our oversight. So what we are doing today, just to remind members, is that it's one of the forms of ensuring that we conduct that that oversight. I am fine, as much as a COVID didn't spare me, but not that much. But the after effects, no matter how mild that is, but I hope I'm going to be able to steer the ship today. In Gqeberha, it's so hot that I'm not quite sure whether it's what is happening before 12 o'clock. The temperature is, I don't understand. I'm welcoming everybody, welcoming the minister and his deputy, welcoming the staff of the portfolio committee, welcoming the staff of the department, obviously led, the administrative side, led by the DG. Having said that, those were the opening remarks. I don't want us to waste much time. Mr. Sakaza, can you please take us through the roll call?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to all my members, the department, the ministry, and my colleagues. Chair, first of all, maybe let me just start by saying that we received an apology from the minister who's attending cabinet. And also to mention that the DM, Deputy Minister, is present, but she appears with the name Phindiwe Boko. So you might not see her name there. Chair from the Portfolio Committee, we've got yourself, Chair, the Chairperson of the Committee. We've got Honorable Nonsele, Honorable Makubele, Honorable Mdabe, Honorable Volmarans, Honorable Zuma, Honorable Begram, Honorable Kado, Honorable Inana, Honorable Mkondo, Honorable Ngobo, Honorable Jenner. And from the support staff, Chair, we've got myself, Poshi Antabeni, Committee Assistants, Mr. Sibongi Seni Ngobo, Content Advisor, Mr. Tebuho Mkwena, the researcher, Ms. Ole Luama Bindisa, the Executive Secretary, and we also have from PMG, Simon Abbott. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sakaza. From the ministry department, you have said that. Do we have any guests? If we do have guests, can guests please introduce themselves outside the department and those that are guests, as we will do that when we were physical.
Good morning, Chair. It's Honorable Faiz Jacobs. I'm just observing. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you, Honorable Jacobs. In future, indicate to the committee section that you will be part of us so that when we introduce honorable members, we also introduce you. Are there any other guests? Okay.
I see, Chair, the name of Enzo L, that is Linda Enzo. I think she's a journalist from some newspaper. I don't know why she's not mentioning her name.
Can she? And who's Jay?
Achari. I don't know.
Achari?
Some, I don't know whether they are from department. I don't know.
Can the journalist please introduce himself or herself?
Chair. Jay Achari is part of the department.
Okay. And so this journalist that is refusing to introduce himself or herself and
Chair, she wrote on the chat that she's unable to unmute herself. Linda, if Linda Enzo.
From which?
Independent newspaper. Let me just.
Okay. No, that's fine. And Millie Raiders?
Department.
She's from the department, Chair.
Oh, okay. No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, honorable members. DM?
Chair, good morning. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson.
Good morning, DM.
I'm trying to show my face. This gadget is not my gadget. Thank you. Just for the sake of honorable members to see me, that I'm not a robot. I would like, if you agree, Chair, to actually close my video. Just to advance the, to make sure, if you allow, Chair, to for
no,
me
it's
to
fine.
Thank you so you much. May. Thank you. Thanks, Chair. As already alluded to the fact that the minister has apologized because he is in the Cabinet Committee of AFU presenting National Migration Labour Policy. Allow me, Chair, to take this opportunity to acknowledge and to thank you for allowing me to present on behalf of the minister to give some opening remarks And allow me to acknowledge honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, our Director General, Dr. Thobile Lamatsi, and officials of our department who are part of this session, and ladies and gentlemen and guests of this Portfolio Committee. Thank you once more for the opportunity, Chair, and honorable members. We must start by actually welcoming your oversight and scrutiny of our department and its entities, because always it keeps us on the straight and narrow. And the officials at a later stage, in just a few moments, will also be providing a detailed presentation to Honorable Self. I just need to just to flag just the following points, Honorable Chairperson, in relation to the Compensation Fund Audit Action Plan. That the action plan seeks to address the key focus areas and categories identified by the Auditor General, which contributed in the past to disclaimed audit reports. And of course, the plan is only as good as it is as its implementation strategy and the system of detailed monitoring and evaluation that you put in place. So the presentation, honorable members, then, is a report on the detailed monitoring of progress made against stated targets as of 31st of December 2021, identifying targets completed as well as areas which are still incomplete or in progress. So we want to flag this as an important step forward, the implementation of a system of detailed monitoring. As the management gurus normally say, close open codes, and if you can't measure it, you can't manage it, close quotes. So we need to take one step back, honorable members, and stress that the plan is firmly based on the Auditor General's findings. And more than that, at every stage of the planning processes, the department and the fund work closely with the Auditor General, seeking their input and feedback. And indeed, we must say that the AG was very gracious enough to recently acknowledge the positive and cooperative response their office receives from the department. And we don't think we say this often enough, but the Office of the Auditor General is not necessarily simply a financial policeman. It is also a mentor and an advisor, providing valuable guidance to public entities which they are wise to make use of. With regards to our departmental first quarter performance report for 2021-2022, honorable members, if you look at the bigger picture over time, you would see a gradual quarter-on-quarter recovery from the disastrous quarter one of 2020-2021 performance of 25%. And remember, honorable members, that was when we were hit hard by the full impact of the pandemic and the lockdown. So the incremental increases continue quarter on quarter from 67% performance for the last quarter of 2020-2021 to 73% of the first quarter of 2021-2022. So the quarter, which is actually the presentation covers, or the report that is under review. So these officials, our officials will provide a detailed breakdown of the performance against targets. We want just to flag one update to the Portfolio Committee in terms of progress in releasing the National Labour Migration Policy for public comments. We had hoped to do this in 2021, if you remember, but Cabinet gave us additional tasks to complete. So this has now been done, and we will be presenting this to the Cabinet Committee this morning. This is what the Minister is actually doing as we're speaking now. So we also need to remind honorable members that the National Labour Migration Policy is only a part of a much bigger or larger project to develop a national employment policy, which is currently being finalized. So for now, honorable members, let me take this opportunity once again to thank you, honorable Chairperson, for this opportunity that has been given to me to represent the Minister. With the opening remarks. Thank you so much.
Thank you, DM. without wasting any time, we'll then hand over to the DG to give us to present their quarterly report, first quarter report. Over to you, DG.
Good morning, Chairperson, and the honorable members, and Deputy Minister, and my colleagues. Chair, I don't know whether we should continue with the introduction of the delegate or delegation from the department, but I think since it's a customary that we normally do that, I'll first start by doing so, if you allow me, Chair.
Yes, Chief.
We have Ms. Egimo Ilua, who's the Inspector General of the department, and Ms. Bahumi Matebesi, who's the DDG Corporate Services, Mr. Peggy Maduna, who's the Chief Financial Officer of the department, Ms. Marsha Bronkhorst, who's the COO. We have Ms. Boitumelo Gumbi from the Compensation Fund, Ms. Fazana Fagir from the Compensation Fund, Mr. Johnny Modipa from the Compensation Fund, Mr. Julian Sopen from the Compensation Fund, Ms. Katlego Lebebe from the Compensation Fund, Mr. Kangala Mdumela, who's the Chief of Staff in the Ministry, Mr. Linda Gota, who's the Acting CFO Compensation Fund, and Ms. Meja Tongwane, who's the Director responsible for ICT in the Compensation Fund. We have Ms. Millie Reuters, also from the Compensation Fund. And we have Ms. Petunia Lessing, who's from our communications unit. And we have Tindiwe Boko. I know there's also DM behind there. We have Sabel O'Malley from the ministry. And we have Ms. Achari that you inquired about, Chair, from Compensation Fund. We have Mr. Mkalipi from who's the Acting DDG, Labour Market Policy and Industrial Relations. We have our PLO, Mr. Tando Ababa, and we have the Commissioner of Compensation Fund, Mr. Mafata, and we have Mr. Mweli from DM's office, and we have Karabo Makakhale from DM's office, and we have Ms. Esther Twane, who is representing Mr. Sam Rotoba. Mr. Sam Rotoba is with the minister in cabinet. He is presenting the National Labour Migration Policy. And we have Matapelo Mataboge from my office. Chair, I'm going to ask the COO to please run through our presentation. And she will be followed by I haven't seen the CEO of SCE, but normally she would have been followed by the CEO of SCE, and the CFO will then round up the figures in terms of the finances of the department. Thank you, Chair. COO.
Thank you, Director General. Good morning to the Chair and to the members of the Portfolio Committee. I'm going to ask also to stay off camera so that we can share the presentation, and Matapelo will be sharing the presentation with us. Thank you very much for that. Chair, it is a very comprehensive presentation, and I don't think time will allow me to go through all 92 slides. So with your approval, I will focus on the salient slides for the presentation. Many of the slides that we have attached are for additional information for the committee members, and we will deal with possible questions that might arise. So if I can ask that Matapelo just move to slideshow and then move immediately to slide number 7. You will see, and I just wanted to do it for our own sake, the legend that we have. I think Matapelo has disappeared, but the presentation was circulated to members, so I'm going to continue until Matapelo joins us, if that is okay with you, Chairperson. Our legend is that we
will... Sorry, ma'am.
Yes.
Is Matapelo not part of the meeting?
Yeah, she is. She was introduced by the Director General, Chairperson. Okay, we're back. Thank you. Slide 7. As I was saying, our legend, only if we have achieved 100% and more, do we give it a green, and anything below that stays a red and not achieved. If we move to slide 8, I think the Deputy Minister has already alluded in her introductions that for quarter one of this financial year, 21-22, we have achieved 73% of our planned target. We had a total of 22, and we have achieved 16 of those. It will be explained a little bit more in slide 10 of the presentation. Here, Chairperson and members, you will see how it breaks down to the contribution of all the programs. Firstly, Program 1, Administration. They have had an overall achievement in this quarter of 71%. Inspection and Enforcement Services has had an overall achievement of 25%. Public Employment Services, as we are used to by now, has had an overall achievement of 100%. And Labour Policy Industrial Relations has had an overall performance of 83%, which brings us then to an aggregate performance of 73% for quarter one. If we move to the next slide, I've done a comparison here to give us a sense of how we performed in quarter four of the 2021 financial year and then against the performance of this first quarter of 21-22. Program 1 Administration, you will see that they were lying at a 38% achievement level, and they have managed to raise this up to 71%. Inspection and Enforcement Services were lying at 50% at the end of quarter four. This has unfortunately gone down to 25%. Public Employment Services has had a performance of 83%, and they have managed to achieve 100% in quarter one. LP and IR has had a performance of 89%, and they also unfortunately had a small decrease to 83%, which takes us then from 67% in quarter four to a performance level of 73% in quarter one. On the next slide, slide 12, we made a graph to give us the members a sense of the achievement over the financial year 2021 and then the first quarter, and you'll see there has always been a increase in performance or improvement in performance. First quarter last year, or 2021, was the first quarter with the hard lockdown we had. You'll see 25% performance level, followed by 48% in quarter two, 64% in quarter three, and then the two quarters that I have already discussed. On slide 13, I have provided the members, the committee, the performance of the provinces in terms of Inspection and Enforcement Services Program 2 and Program 3. And here we can see the reflection of the performance as we saw when I spoke about the program performance, that for Program 2, Inspection and Enforcement Services, the overall performance per province was substantially lower than what we are used to. Eastern Cape 33%, Free State also 33%, Gauteng 67%, KZN 67%, Limpopo 67%, Mpumalanga 33%, Northern Cape 33%, and Northwest 67%, Western Cape coming in at 33%. For Public Employment Services, all the provinces achieved 100% except for Gauteng and KZN and Western Cape. The first two provinces lying at a 50%, and then the Western Cape lying at a 75%. And I know there will be a question as to how then did the branch or the program achieve 100% performance with three provinces not achieving 100%. It is because of the total number of targets, or the way the targets were met by the other provinces. They were overachievements and set against the total target of the program. There was overachievement in the program. So if you will allow me, Chairperson, I'm going to focus on the area of non-achievement for this quarter so that we can have discussions around that. The first area for non-achievement is on slide 16. And this is the vacancy level, and members on this committee will know this is a chronic challenge that we have, and it comes with us from year to year, in fact, from quarter to quarter. So our vacancy rate was lying at 11%, where we wanted to have it at 3%. And these are as a result of our, posts, which are mostly lower level posts, and they are filled through internal promotions. The post levels 8 and below are filled by internal promotions, creating a vacuum or vacancy again. On slide 18 is the next area of non-performance or underperformance, let me rather call it that. You will see that we have had a target of 93% of our employment relations cases had to be finalized, and there was only an achievement of 51%. This is due to the fact that the timeframes by the Anti-Fraud and Corruption Unit and the timeframes of the finalization of the employment relations cases are not synchronized. They both have 90 days, and that automatically leads to the employment relations matters not being finalized in time. That takes care of the areas of underperformance for the Program 1 administration. If we can move to Program 2, Inspection and Enforcement Services. Here, the area of underperformance is that of inspections, number of workplaces inspected to determine their compliance. And here, the target was 74,222, and only 49,278 employers were inspected. Of this, 36,589 employers were compliant to labor legislation. But there's a substantial variance of just under 25,000 inspections that could not take place. And the the reason for this variance was the fact that quite a number of inspectors tested positive for COVID and they could not do their work. And then other inspectors were on mandatory leave and study leave. And then, of course, still the workplaces that were not accessible due to the number of COVID cases in the workplaces. So the administrative inspections, which the committee will recall we have embarked on in the beginning of the pandemic, has to be strengthened and more of them to be conducted to make sure that we can achieve these numbers of inspections. And then also the inspectors are to be prioritized for vaccinations so that they can continue doing their work. And if they should become sick, that the impact is not as serious as it can be. The next area of non-compliance for the program is on slide 24. Here we've had a 65% that was expected to be referred for prosecution within 35 days. This is of employers that are non-compliant. And only 32.5% could be referred for prosecution. There's a reduced number of enforcement structures, such as the courts that remain open, and that had an impact on the efficiency of the inspectorate. There was also a backlog that came in and that had to be dealt with, but could not be reported as it fell outside the reporting period of quarter one. So there were quite a number of measures put in place to deal with the matters at the court, and then also the usage of technology for the submission of documents. On slide 25, the occupational health and safety seminar that had to take place, this has not been achieved. The seminar was scheduled to be held physically, but due to safety regulations in response to the pandemic, it was postponed and rescheduled for the 21st of July. And this was because of the alert levels of the regulations. Some of these things could not take place physically, as was the plan, and had to bring in virtual seminars, etc. Chairperson, that takes care of Program 2 and the areas of underperformance in Program 2. I would like to move to Program 3 and just give a sense of the work seekers registered here Although the branch has achieved the indicator and surpassed the indicator by far, Gauteng province has had a challenge in terms of the registration of work seekers. And you will see that this is a thread that runs through in terms of the underperformance of the Gauteng province in public employment services. On the next slide that I would like to talk about is slide 34. And this is the age groups, work seekers registered by age groups. Of the total number of 236,127, 61% or 143,199 were of young people below the age of 35. So 65% of the work seekers that we register are below the age of 35. And I would like to allude to this slide a little bit later when I talk about placement of work seekers. If we can go to the next slide, slide 37. Here we will see that only 0.3% of work seekers that register with the Department of Employment and Labour are people with disabilities. It's a very small number of work seekers, and it's of some concern to us that we don't seem to register work seekers with disabilities. On slide 49, here I would like to talk about the employment counselling per age group. You will recall that I said earlier that 61% of people who registered with the department are young people. Here, it is interesting to note that 73% of the people who avail themselves for employment counselling are young people, people below the age of 35. So it would appear as if young people use this service more than people who have settled, if I can use the word, in employment or in the careers that they follow on a day-to-day basis. On slide 60 is the placement of work seekers per age group. And this is the slide I said I would like to refer to. Although 61% of the people who are registered with the Department of Employment and Labour, the work seekers, are youth or young people, 67% of the work seekers who were placed are young people between the ages of 15 and 35%. So there's a small number, the number that of work seekers that are placed for young people are a little bit bigger than the number pro rata to what is being registered with the Department of Employment and Labour. The next slide I would like to focus on is slide 64. Members will remember that this is a new indicator in the annual performance plan of the department, and that we had to conclude a number of partnership agreements with stakeholders to make sure that we can all contribute to decent employment creation through inclusive economic growth. On the next slide, I'm unpacking it a little bit more to give you a sense on where we have had partnerships. And although this is an indicator that has been achieved, I thought the information contained in here would be of some interest to the members. First, the first collaborative partner is Ekurhuleni Artisans and Skills Training College in Gauteng, who are assisting us or partnering us with the registration of work seekers and placement of registered work seekers. NSG, with the placement of work seekers, this is a national entity, as you are aware. The Western Cape Department of Economic Development and Tourism, also the registration of job opportunities, counselling and placement of registered work seekers. They operate mostly in the Western Cape, obviously. The Mustard Seed Foundation, the registration of opportunities, placement of registered work seekers. This happens mostly in Gauteng. And then the OR Tambo District Municipality, the registration of works, job opportunities and placement of work seekers. This happens in the Eastern Cape. Chairperson, then from slide 67 to slide 75, I give you information on the National Employment Policy, the National Labour Migration Policy. And this is for information purposes. The Deputy Minister has already alluded to the fact that the Minister and the DDG for Public Employment Services are at Cabinet this morning around these two policies. So we will come and do a detailed briefing on the policies as well as the proposed amendment bill as soon as the cabinet processes have been finalized. But the information was given just for you to have a sense at the end of quarter one where we were working with. So I would now like to move to slide 90, which is labor policy and industrial relations. There's one area that was not achieved, and this was the annual job opportunity and unemployment report, which was delivered 2 weeks after the deadline. And this was mostly because of the scheduled work restrictions that we had, as well as external data and some internal data, which we had to clean and refine in order to get a report out or to publish a report that could be relied upon. Chairperson, I think that takes care of the presentation, except to say then that of the 22 indicators, of the 28 indicators, we achieved 22 with a 73% achievement rate, which is a little bit better than where we ended the quarter four in 2021. But it's a reality that the COVID pandemic still has got a negative impact on our performance, because of the fact that we have to access workplaces, etc. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, ma'am. Did she have anything that you would like before I open for questions?
No, thanks, Chair. I think she did the presentation, I think, very, very well. We'll take the questions, Chair.
Honorable members, there is the presentation. Can I get an indication of who will want to get some comments, clarities? I'm trying to see the hands. Oh yeah, now I see Honorable Kondo, Honorable Mkondo, Honorable Mdabe in that order. Honorable Mkondo.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you, Chair. We wish you a speedy recovery from that monster called COVID. Good morning to honorable members, the Deputy Minister, the DG and their teams, our guests, if we do have any guests. Chair, thanks for the opportunity. Chair, we welcome the improvement in the performance, but just to say, it's still not enough. We understand the challenges that have been experienced by the department. But the improvement is welcome, but it's still enough. We hope the department will work even harder to achieve even more. The Deputy Minister talked about the National Labour Migration Policy activities that has already started. That is of public interest, Chair. We will be waiting to hear as to exactly after the executive processes have been finalized. We are waiting to be a part of those activities. Chair, my main worry, though I understand that COVID played a very pivotal role in the inspection enforcement services to achieve only 25% and that the department is now advocating for the vaccination of the inspectors. My question is, how far are they, Chair? And that to just ask that, is it possible? Because the department was having the mega blitz inspections in the hospitality sector during the few weeks. Chair, is it possible that we can get a clear program of such activities as a committee as to how many entities will be targeted, maybe in a quarter, and then we are able to get a report, because that also is of a public interest. A chair, people want to know as to what are these inspectors doing specifically with regard to what they were doing during the mega blitz inspection in the hospitality sector, and to ask as to when are the other sectors like funds going to be targeted. That will be my comments and questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhonto, Honorable Mdabe.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to you, and good morning to the honorable members, and the Deputy Minister, DG, and the management. Chair, we welcome the presentation and improvement, as the Honorable Mkhonto has said. However, it is a challenge, especially in the provinces that are economic hub of the country. Your Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape. Our IES performance is almost 67%, and it is a serious challenge. On slide 22, there were 24,000 companies that were not inspected, almost 25,000. Out of the 49,000 that were inspected, 36,000 were compliant with the existing law. And then 12,000 of those, 12,600, were non-compliant. If we take the magnitude of the challenges that we faced as a nation, that this department has a responsibility to make sure that people do have confidence in what we do as government, to make sure that those who are employed, their employment is secured and is compliant with the legislative parameters. Therefore, if we find that 12,600 of the employers are not compliant, and we are not given a report that says what has then been done about those who have 12,000 employers that have not been complying with the legislative requirements, how are we going to then respond to the challenges that are being raised on a daily basis by the people? If those, I'm not sure whether there is anybody in the department that is looking into the social media, especially the ones that talks to the people who are serviced by the department, who engage in the department social networks. The complaints are enormous. So we therefore need to find a way of how best can we address and improve on the work that we do, especially in the labor centers. I'm not sure, Chair, whether some members have been able to visit the labor centers in their constituencies. Our people are exposed to the environment that is not conducive for service delivery. I think we are far worse than what we used to know as bad service. The worst department used to be Home Affairs, but we seem to be far exceeding, underperforming in the what we do in the labor centers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mugabe. I see those were the only hands. From my side, I would like, if it's possible, I'm more, as much as all slides are interesting, I would be interested in slide 62. Is it possible to go back there? Because I'm using the same gadget that has got my documents. Is it possible, DG? The one that talks about, yes, this slide for me is very, it's quite interesting. Where it is falling short, in my view, DG, is that these placements, is it possible for these placements to be categorized, if I can put it that way, so that we are aware which sector is you are more placing these young people. That will be my, if you can also go to slide 65. Yes, the collaborative partner that you are having. Is it possible, or is it something that is difficult to achieve, that you also have a collaborative partnership with TVET colleges? I'm raising that because it's where young people are attending to achieve the skills. Is it really? I'm raising that because we are always as public representatives and as activists that would like to see an end of this silo mentality by departments. And I think as the legislative arm of the state, we are to ensure that is enforced with this time around, because there are a number of things that may be falling into cracks, and as this portfolio committee, which is overseeing the Department of Labor, will be just very harsh by history, because it is our responsibility to really have an understanding and know what is happening in other departments, how do they work. If and I hope it's not something that is out of, is that if I can just take it to tour, the president in 2019 said, Sona, that young people when they seek employment, experience is not to be asked. Where are you able to pick that up as the department, so that we know? Or is it because departments, because of their silo mentality, I don't want to say it's a no-go area to go to one department, or there are serious protocol challenges regarding to that. And if we're not exposed to that, we will then just be, and we will have to take responsibility when we are blamed by citizenry, that we are toothless as the National Assembly and its committees in ensuring that we make these departments to account. And in my view, that's why I am then asking these questions, that do you have that partnership with the Department of Higher Education and Training, in particular, the TVET area. I would really appreciate if the other slide which caught my interest is one that is for non-compliant employers in terms of the inspection. You said something about the usage of technology. I don't know whether it's usage of technology in terms of preparing case for prosecution, or is it usage of technology in accessing, the department of that is to prosecute these employers. If you can just clarify that for me, and do say if I misunderstood I have done that. I would then allow you to, but before that, DM and DG, my understanding is that there is a partnership between labor, government, employer, communities in NEDLAC, which among other things, why I'm raising that is because I am finding it very difficult. And I think that's what, as the committee, we must look into, that a social partner that is forever taking a knock in terms of some of the issues that are found to be lacking in the workplace in terms of the office, the health and safety officers, that I would have thought that the department will also reflect that we think that the labor in the workplace and the employer are not coming together in addressing this, because it's something that I think that now we will have to really look into that as this committee, because we are a committee that is expected to ensure that a workplace is a conducive place to work. But it is not only the responsibility of government, because government is not at the factory floor. There it is an employer and employee. And how are relations there? So that we are then able to say to government, we think you are falling short in assisting here. And also to take both these partners, the labor and the employer, to account if they are failing to represent their workers. And if the employer is also sabotaging the labor force in its workplace, because it wants to continue doing things outside the law. That is why I am interested in that, and teach that comment in terms of how is the situation in terms of the workplace in your observations as Department of Labor. And we will hand over to you for response. Over for you to respond on the comments and questions that have been asked.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the honorable members for the questions that you've asked. We appreciate the comments made by Honorable Mkhondo. We certainly striving to make sure that we improve our performance and achieve all the set targets. When it comes to the national labor migration policy, what we ask in cabinet to do is to allow us to start the consultations, meaning that we have to publish the document we have to send the document out for public comments, and thereby also starting a process that will lead to NEDLAC social partners discussing the policy. So those are the two processes that we're asking cabinet to allow us to do, and hopefully the outcome of the meeting today will grant us that opportunity. I'll ask DDG Inspection Enforcement Services to talk about the Inspection Enforcement Services performance. There's an issue relating to us advocating for the vaccination of the inspectors, and how far are we with that? Honorable members would know that for now, the issue of vaccination is not mandatory. Therefore, as the department, we are often, in fact, we are guided by the Department of Public Service and Administration on the steps that we must take with regards to the issues relating to vaccination. We encourage our inspectors, and in fact, all our officials, to vaccinate. And we're hoping that the outcome of the CCMA case and the ruling by the CCMA recently on the issue of mandatory vaccination will help the DPSA to provide us with guidance on this matter. Because we are a government department. We have our views in terms of mandatory vaccination, but being a public institution, we're guided by public service and administration department. So we have not issued any instruction to our inspectors to vaccinate, but we have encouraged them to do so, as we have encouraged all other officials of the department. On the CLEAR program of the blitzes, certainly we will share a copy with the committee, a copy of our plans, and we will also provide reports of our findings when we visited this establishment. And just to give an indication to the committee that We target all sectors, not only the hospitality sector, and we target all sectors, including the farming sector. I think there was a question that Honorable Mpondo raised whether we do other sectors. So we'll share that information with the committee. On the issue relating to service delivery, Honorable Mdabe, we share the sentiments, because what we've picked up is that before COVID, even though we had long queues in some areas, but we had found a way of mitigating the challenges of queues. We established the queue marshal. We came up with a system that manages queues, but I think the backlog that people had in terms of coming to the department and report and complain and apply for benefits has created a challenge where we see the long queues at our offices. We are in the process of devising means to reduce this. I think when the time is right, we will share that information with the committee. because we want to make sure that we reduce these dues and also even the outstanding claims that we're sitting with. There's a lot of work that was done around December, because the instruction that we issued to, for instance, UIF was that all the claims that formed the backlog must be eradicated. And a lot of work went through during the December period. So those are some of the steps that we're taking to make sure that we reduce the long queues. And of course, there's the issue of providing shelter to this to our people when they visit our offices. Often we battle to make sure that this happens, because we rent and this we're renting these offices, and in most instances we have landlords that are just very, very difficult. I think that we're also battling, for instance, to provide water when we have water outages, because landlords in some instances are refusing to make sure that we have tanks there that will provide water to our not only to the officials in the offices, but also to the people that visit our offices. But this is a matter that we are handling with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure to make sure that we address all these things. And in a situation where we have new offices, I think we have attended to this, where there's adequate cover or shelter for people who are able to stand in queues. But we also have another phenomenon where people decide that they're not going to go to the labor center. They'll either write to me, the minister or deputy minister, because they don't want to sit or stand in queues. Even though we appreciate that, but it means that we have to prioritize those complaints that come through our offices, because that's the very nature of how we operate, is that complaints that are coming through the office of the DG minister, DM, they are given priority. And that makes it very difficult, because those that are sitting at labor centers who decided that they would follow the correct channels are now finding themselves at a disadvantaged position because their cases are not prioritized. So we all appeal to people as much as we have an open door policy that they must go to our offices so that we treat everybody equally. On the categorization of the of placement in slide 2, I had asked the Public Employment Services colleagues to send me a slide. I'm not sure if that slide has been received by Matapelo, so that you can flash that slide, Chair, and you can see that indeed we do categorize placement by sector, not only by gender. I think when that slide is ready, Matapelo will just flash it. On the issue of collaboration, yes, we have a very strong relationship with Department of Higher Education and Training. And in fact, we work very, very closely with TVET colleges. And some of the labor activation programs that we have it with the TVET colleges. So we have a very good relationship with them, but that can be improved because it's not all TVET colleges. We're currently working with DHET on issues relating to the employment of graduates. And that includes, people that are coming through the TVET colleges. So this slide, Chair, that you see, it gives you a sense of where these opportunities, whether the opportunities were were informal or were from the learnerships. So you can see that 57% of that 14,852 were formal jobs, and 33% were projects, and 7% were learnership. And on the graph, you can see that we also have apprenticeship. We also have UIF labor activation program, and the SIPS one. So we categorize the next slide. Is that the only slide you got, Matapelo? And we disaggregated it in terms of the provinces. So that's the data in terms of what each province has contributed in terms of the placement. Next slide. This is placement by employment type. I think it's a disaggregation of that data in terms of whether it's temporary or permanent positions. Okay, next slide. So this slide, Chair, gives you that categorization you were talking about. You see that normal services, 67, agriculture, safety and security, manufacturing, mining, local government, insurance, education, construction, clothing and textile, chemical, banking, finance and accounting. And you see local government, safety and security and education are very, very high. So that's the categorization, Chair, that you asked for. So what we'll do, we'll include these slides in every quarterly report that we submit to the committee so that you have a sense of the totality of placement that we're reporting. I think the Inspector General will deal with the issues of inspections and non-compliance. Honorable Dabe raised the issue of 12,500 employees that are non-compliant. And in the report, we're not indicating what has happened to that. I think the Inspector General will deal with that. On the issue of experience, Chair, indeed, the President announced that for entry-level positions in government, we must relax the requirements so that we're able to absorb quite a number of people. And indeed, we have done that in the department. All entry-level posts do not require experience unless it's in the specialized field, like in your occupational health and safety area of the work, where we require specialization and experience. Even with that, if it's a normal junior post or entry-level post, the requirement for experience has also been relaxed, but we did not relax qualification because we need those and we cannot relax those. So I'm going to ask, and I think there was a circular that DPSA issued to that effect, Chair, where it was instructing all department to make sure that all posts at the entry level, in those posts were able to absorb young people that do not have experience. I'll ask the COO to talk about the service delivery at our labor centers a little bit, Inspector General to reflect on the inspection enforcement services work and the reasons why in the first quarter we have performed at a very low performance, and other issues raised by Honorable Dabe on what happened to those 12,500 employers that were non-compliant. Did you Inspector General, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Probably before I respond to the questions of underperformance, Chair, please allow me to also talk to issues that were raised by Honorable Mukonto in terms of the mega blitzes that have been happening currently. Yes, we've embarked on mega blitzes. I need to point out that the concept of conducting blitzes has always been an inherent part of the work that we do as the inspectorate. So it is really nothing new. However, at the latter part of 2021, we introduced the concept of mega blitzes. The difference between the traditional blitzes and the mega blitzes is that we've brought in the issue of national roving teams. What that means essentially is that we will bring in inspectors from various provinces to go and to form a team that is going to blitz in a particular area. Part of the reason we're doing that, Chair, is that we amplify on our resources and the impact, as well as circumventing the whole issue of over-familiarity of particular inspectors with particular workplaces. So that is what the mega blitzes is meant to do. The first mega blitz that took place was in the Eastern Cape from the 22nd to the 27th of November last year. In this instance, we targeted the road freight and logistics. And Chair, I need to mention that each province is going to have its mega blitz, and the approach and the sectors that are going to be targeted by each province will depend on what the various provinces will regard as either high risk or problematic sectors. So for the Eastern Cape, the mega blitz covered the road freight and logistics sector. We conducted in total 67 inspections. We also had two roadblocks. And also inherently, mega blitzes bring all role players in the space of enforcing compliance. So for instance, with the Eastern Cape one, we had bargaining councils being part of the mega blitzes. We had home affairs, particularly immigration officials, or instances in which we'll, so that they're able to deal with immigratory issues or migratory issues. We also had SAPS and so forth. So it's just for me to point out that. So the other interesting dimension is that we also had two roadblocks. One was on the N2 truck in, and the other one was at the Kinky Boss. So it was a joint initiative, like I indicated. Then in the Western Cape, actually we started with the hospitality sector mega blitz last year for the Western Cape. This year was a continuation of the work that had started last year, still on the same week, 22nd to 27th. Then I think about 2 weeks back or so in the Western Cape, from what we targeted in terms of the blitzes, is that we looked at the hospitality sector. We inspected just under around 900 and something workplaces in the hospitality sector. We covered the Overberg area, Milnerton, as well as Western Cape Central. The next blitz is going to KZN. It is going to take place on the 7th to the 11th of February, so basically next week. And we are targeting to cover 1,880 workplaces. It is going to be covering a wide spectrum of sectors, and almost all the sectors are going to be blitzed, including wholesale and retail, road freight and logistics, as well as, again, the hospitality sector. We have a program, like the DGS said, all the provinces are going to be conducting their mega blitzes. we are going to avail the program. We also would avail reports like DGS said, as and when we finish the Eastern Cape is already available and quite detailed. It can forward it immediately after this meeting. We're busy finalizing the Western Cape one. So that is just in terms of the concept of the mega blitzes. And then with regard to the performance of the branch, indeed, the performance is also unacceptable and worrisome to us as well. We are indeed sitting at 25%. We have flagged the issue of COVID as being a problematic. I mean, in April, we're at alert level one. Last year in May, alert level two, and then June, alert level three. So the fluctuations also kind of played a role in making us to be a bit unstable. However, Chair, I also need to indicate that with some of the reasons that we didn't advance and could have, amongst others, entail the issue of vacancies. At that time, the reporting period, the branch was sitting with 273 vacancies, which is about 12% of the vacancy rate. We have since improved. However, that number at that time was unacceptably high and indeed also affected our performance as a branch. We've also started to utilize the case management system. What this means is that the work that we do, we now capture electronically instead of manually. Honourable members will recall that the branch has been inundated with unpalatable audit outcomes with regards to our findings. And I think I know most of the negative findings were driven by the fact that we've always been manually intensive when it came to the way we report. So since the beginning of the financial year, since April last year, we took a decision that we're going to utilize the case management system. It has come with its fair share of challenges, and some of the work that we've done were unable to reflect the work on the system on time. So that also had a bearing on our performance. We have since improved because we are indeed reporting historically, and some of the measures that we have put in place have borne some fruits. And honorable members will notice that as we come back to report on the next reporting periods, there will be improvements that would have taken place. Honorable Mdebe raised the issue of the 12,642. Workplaces that were non-compliant. In that regard, we issued out notices. 99% of those workplaces were issued with notices. Exactly 12,593. Those workplaces that continued to, or that remained non-compliant, even after the notices have been issued, were then referred for prosecution. And in that regard, we referred over 500 workplaces for prosecution. So I do need to emphasize that each and every workplace that is found to be non-compliant is dealt with. Our standard allows us to refer at least 90%, or rather to issue out at least 90% notices to non-complying workplaces within 14 days. So in this regard and at this quarter, we're able to issue out 99% within 14 days, thus surpassing the target. The last question was raised by yourself, Honorable Chair, regarding the usage of technology. We're really talking about that in the space of prosecutions. And unfortunately, when it comes to referral for prosecutions, it's an activity that is outside our domain of control. We depend on prosecutory institutions, and we know that sometimes these can be very traditional. We find that they wouldn't necessarily accept the documents that are emailed or sent in other ways. prefer that we send these things in person. So in our engagements with the prosecuting authorities, we're trying to explore the extent to which we could utilize technology to enable us to be able to send documents and sometimes also rule out the issue of printing documents because of the need of hard copies. It's something that is ongoing, and some of the things are legal and may not be resolved at a speed that we'd like to that we desire. However, it's things that we continue to explore because we work closely with role players and partners, particularly in the space of compliance enforcement. And I think that takes care of the questions that relate to inspection enforcement services. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Inspector General. DG? Is DG still
alive? Yes, I'm here, Chairperson. I'll ask the COO to just reflect on the performance of the labor centers. COO?
Thank you, DG. Indeed, what the DG has said earlier, the performance of the labor centers is of grave concern to us because we can also see the queues standing in front of the labor centers. But I would like to put one matter into perspective. We tend to forget that a labor center is also a workplace and as such is also subject to all the occupational health and safety rules and regulations that we have implemented for all other workplaces. Now, let me make it practical. If a labor center services 300 people a day, there's a positive case in that labor center and we have to close the labor center to clean it for the safety of our clients as well as our staff. It normally takes, if it happens today, by tomorrow it is cleaned, it opens the day thereafter. It means immediately there's an additional 600 people that must be serviced by the labor center under the circumstances that we've had up to now. So it does build queues. We have appointed queue marshals to deal with these queues, to send people in different directions, depending on the type of service that they have or they require. And then one of the big reasons for the long queues was also the backlog that there was in terms of online applications for unemployment insurance benefits. Now, this backlog has been worked off by the provinces. It was first centralized at the UIF head office. And then I think towards end of September, October last year, it was decentralized to provinces. And they've worked off the backlog so that there is no backlog or virtually no backlog at the moment. So that also takes care of a number of clients. What the Director General has said about the office accommodation, I'm not going to repeat. I think those are well-known matters. But our staff work, we have extended service hours in an attempt to deal with the clients as they come in. Some labor centers have also gone so far as to put where they see the queues are lengthy, chairs on the outside, so that clients at least can sit when they have to wait. We also have to sometimes, unfortunately, limit the number of clients that we can deal with on a given day, given all the regulations and prescripts that we have to follow. Jay, so it is indeed not an ideal situation. We are doing what we can in the difficult circumstances to assist our clients as fast and best to the best of our abilities. Thank you.
DG, I don't think it will be, I'm trying to get if it is fair for Ms. Marshall too. We're not aware or we have forgotten that labor centers are workplaces. And I think that statement, I don't think it is fair. We are quite aware that they are workplaces and they are to be run and managed according now to protocols. That we are aware. But it doesn't mean that when we see or we witness or observe how people are serviced, we must then keep quiet because it's a labor center and so what. So I'm it's a workplace. So I'm really appealing. We know that the Department of Labor, at DM and its officials at local level, they are doing the best that they can do. I'll make an example in where I stay in Gqeberha. It's a very awkward situation where you are located in terms of shelters. But when they are inside, immediately when they are inside and the queue marshals are doing their level best, but it can't be. Maybe, English is not my first language, but to say that we tend to forget that labor centers are workplaces, no, it didn't occur well to me. And I'm not implying that it was said to undermine our question, but one thing we need to be reminded. We are aware, but we will raise the issues that we want to raise. The only thing that has not been responded by you, DG, is this thing of the workplace, health and safety, environment. Government is forever blamed, but there are role players there at the workplace with this labor and the employer. And the relationship in managing those, I don't know whether the Inspector General is able to respond to that.
Chair, thank you very much. I think you're correct. That didn't come out right. I suppose it's a question of how one expresses herself or himself. I think what the COO was trying to say was that whilst we concerned about the service delivery, we also have another challenge where we try our level best to reduce exposing our official to all sorts of risks. But I think I agree with you that didn't come out nicely. And I know what she meant. She didn't mean it to try and disrespect the committee, or I think she was trying to express the point that we often have to strike a balance because we have to protect our officials. The point you raised here, I was going to respond to it. The issue of partnerships between social partners at NETLEC and also the permeation of that partnership at a workplace level, especially when it relates to occupational health and safety. During COVID, there was a very good drive by organized labor to resuscitate the health and safety committees. Remember that the OHS Act requires workplaces to establish health and safety, to appoint health and safety reps and establish health and safety committees. And the inspections that we did during COVID, and in fact, even long before COVID, we would pick up that such structures are dysfunctional. Now, those structures are very, very important in the sense that they allow the dialogue or discussions amongst the social partners at a workplace level and resolve the issues around health and safety and how risks are supposed to be mitigated. Now, there are three reports that we look at generally as a department. One is an industrial action report. That industrial action report often gives us a sense of how social partners at the workplace level, how they relate to one another, and whether there's engagement, if there is engagement, whether that engagement is a meaningful engagement. And we often find out that, you know, one of the reasons that lead to strikes, for instance, is the fact that when people engage one another, they don't engage to resolve the issue. They engage for the sake of engaging. Because one of the findings that one would see in the industrial action report is that organized labor would demand 5%, and an employer would say, we can't afford that. And organized labor will then go on strike. They'll come back and settle at 5% or 4%. Now, you ask yourself, why is it that they could not, you know, find themselves in the first place, find one another and resolve the matter? And they already embarked on a strike and employees lost an income. You also find situations where workers demand that they be paid 5%. Employer says, we don't have money. Workers go on strike, they come back. Employer settles at 6-7%. So you ask yourself, but if the settlement is above what the employees demanded in the first place, why was it, why did the two parties not engaged meaningfully so that strike could be avoided? So the second report that we use that tells us that there's no engagement or meaningful engagement at the workplace are the OHS inspection reports that we get. So in most instances, you see that the health and safety reps have not been appointed. And if they were appointed, the right process was not followed, because there's a laid down process in the OHS Act in terms of how the health and safety reps must be appointed. So if instances where the right process was followed, the type of people that have been appointed do not know anything about the health and safety of this section or area where they work, because that's another criteria that if you work in this area, you should know a lot about this area and you should be able to identify risks that are associated with work in that specific area. So the last report that we use is the CF report. We look at the number of incidences in the workplace. And that report tells us quite a lot. If you look at the number of claims and benefits that we're paying, it gives us a sense that indeed both partners at the workplace are not, you know, putting enough effort to reduce incidences, or, you know, there's no safety management system. If there is a safety management system, that safety management system is not working. Because when a system is working, you should see by the reduction in the number of incidences. And yet what we're seeing is the opposite. So there's a lot of work that social partners need to do. I'm sure you've heard the president was talking about a social compact to deal with issues of poverty and unemployment. But if we don't address issues of health and safety at the workplace, and there's no social compact at the workplace, we will not have a functioning social compact at the national level. Because what happens at the national level must permeate through to, to a local level, and meaning that at a specific workplace. So that we need to build those relations. The CCMA has a strategy where they're calling it Vuselela, where they proactively go to workplaces and deal with these kinds of issues, try to prevent whatever disputes that may arise as a result of both parties not working, not only in relation to issues related to wages or salaries, but issues relating to occupational health and safety, they look at those. In short, Chair, that's my response on that issue.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, TG and your
just
team.
A last point, Chair. Just a last point, Chair, on that. You would also know that we're in the process of amending the Occupational Health and Safety Act. And one of the provisions that we're including now is a provision that allows employees to leave an unsafe and unhealthy situation or environment. And that's a provision that we don't have in the existing legislation. And we think that provision provides employees with a tool that they can use to make sure that their health and safety is protected in an event that the employer doesn't care about their health and safety. But of course, there will be consequences, and we just need to make sure that there are right mechanisms to deal with those consequences. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you. Thank you, DJ. I hope that amendment will reach us very soon as the committee, so that we look into that, because it will be quite an interesting situation. We will now, without wasting any time, we'll then call the next presentation, which the DG will introduce the action plan of the compensation fund. Thank you.
Sure, thank you very much. The committee will remember that we came to the committee, we said, there are a number of areas that we're working on, and some of these areas they are long term, and some of them they are medium term, and they are short term goals that we think we can easily dispense with, so that we deal with those issues. And one of the things that we said we will do is that we will build capacity around finances, so that we're able to deal with all financial related queries or AG findings, and we have indeed done that. I think the commissioner will dwell on that. And secondly, how through the use of the system that we have now, how we have managed to deal with a number of areas. There are still serious challenges, as you will see from the report by AG, but we are optimistic that in the 2021-2022 financial year, we would have resolved quite a number of these challenges given the resources that we have now provided to the fund to address quite a number of the challenges that AG has faced. So I'm going to ask the Commissioner Chair to quickly run through the presentation. Thank you. Commissioner Mafata.
Good morning to the honorable members, the deputy minister. I'm connecting from Ms. Reiter's machine. I'm having network challenges with my devices. I'm going to ask Matapelo to just beam the presentation, because I can't beam it from where I am.
Sorry, is it possible for you to come a bit down? We don't see your face, we only see your mouth. We see half of your face.
I'm trying to just adjust this device.
Okay.
Can the chairperson see me? Thank you, Matapelo. Can you just go to the main slide? Mm-hmm. Matapelo, can you hear me?
Whilst we are waiting for Matapelo, I think I will request honourable members to go to utilize the slides were circulated, but I hope Matapelo will then be able to log in. You may continue. Is it fine, honourable members?
Excuse me, Chair. Chair Zolani.
Yes, Chair.
Now, why everybody?
Chair.
Honourable Nkonto.
I just want to check, Chair, that does this mean that the commissioner is not ready with the presentation?
No, the commissioner is ready with the presentation. The only problem, honourable member, is that the Matapelo was a bit delaying. Now this thing is on the, they have floated the presentation. You may continue, honourable. I'm sorry, Mr. Mafate. Over to you, Mr. Mafate.
Mr. Chair, here I am. So slide two is just the executive summary in terms of the content of the presentation, which details what I'll be taking the committee through. Matapelo, if you can just go to slide three, the next slide. The presentation, as the Deputy Minister outlined in her opening remarks, that this is the action plan that seeks to address the root causes that led to the audit outcomes based on those key focus areas that contributed to the disclaimed audit opinions as outlined or highlighted by the Auditor General over the last couple of years. And it would then, so the plan just shows the work that has been completed based on the actions and the targets that we had set for ourselves by end of December, and it also reflects a bit also on those that are due in the next quarter, the quarter ending March 2022, and gives a bit of a high level outline of what those or what the number of those activities are. Go to the next slide. So in the presentation, we'll have three color schemes that reflect the activities that have been completed. We'd have green, which would show those that have been completed, and also the ones that are not yet complete. The ones that would be highlighted in red are those activities that, as part of the action plan, were due by end of December 2021 and would have not been completed, though they would have been started by then. And the ones that are highlighted in blue are those ones that relate to activities that are not yet due for reporting. They are due, though, in the next quarter. So that we don't lose track of those items that are due in the immediate term, we then also track those so that we know as part of the activities that we do to monitor the implementation of the action plan, we also then keep track of those activities. If you go to the next slide. Then this is just the overall summary. So out of the total actions in the action plan, about 169 of these actions were due in December. Majority of the actions in the action plan were in December, and with just a few other actions due over the course of the 2022 calendar year. So out of these, about 138, which makes up about 82% of the activities, were due in December. We were completed, and they're broken down into those different categories that we've used to track the implementation of the action plan. And I'll touch on the details a bit later on. And about 31 were not yet complete at the end of December. And some of those we will report when we report for the progress reporting at the end of January, that some of those activities would then have been completed during the course of January and February. And these are about 31 of these activities, which makes up about 18% of the activities that were due and about 12 activities or actions are due for implementation by March 2022. So we are tracking these 12 activities to make sure also these are implemented and completed by end of March. That would leave us with just under about 10% of the actions that were part of the total action plan, which are then due over the course of 2022. In the next slide. To the next slide, Matapelo. Next slide, Matapelo. As Matapelo is moving to the next slide is slide number 6, which then starts to show the progress for each of these categories that you see on your left-hand side in this table. Chair, I may proceed, hoping the members are following from the presentations, from the handouts. Okay, so the first category or area was under revenue and receivables from non-exchange transactions. So now these are audit issues that had been identified out of the revenue that we collect as levies from employers. So this in our financial statements is classified as revenue and receivables from non-exchange transactions. Out of the, there were about 48 actions in total that we have in the action plan for this particular category. About 42 of them were to be implemented by December 2021. And 7 of these actions are the ones that were due over the course of 2022. Out of these, we implemented about 33 that we completed, which makes up about 79% of the actions. And about 9 of these activities were had not been completed at the end of January, which would, if we take these 9, we then add them to the 7 that are due only towards the end of 2022, it makes it about 15 activities that are still to be implemented in the current year. If you go to the next slide, then we start talking to the details in terms of some of those activities that we've done. If you look here, some of the issues that we had to address was related to the completeness and accuracy of the return of earnings that are submitted by employers. And one of the challenges as we presented when we were presenting the action plan is that one of the issues that led to doubts over the completeness and accuracy of these was that there were various streams of receiving return of earnings. And as a result, there was no certainty on the AG was auditing as to whether all return of earnings have been accounted for in the revenue that we've raised. So we had activities detailing around how we're going to ensure completeness during the filing season in June this year. So these activities, and also we've developed standard operating procedures that would also help us to continue to implement this action in subsequent years. Though a policy decision has already been taken that we will not be taking any manual return of earnings, but all the return of earnings will be submitted online, as about 98% of employers do submit their returns online. Only a small percentage of employers who are still submitting manual return of earnings. We also had to deal with making sure that we fill all the vacancies within the employer services unit, which would then help us to be able to deal with the backlogs relating to employers that are flagged for audit. And we were able to then fill a lot of those positions that were critical in employer services to make sure that we deal with employers that are flagged for audit. And we have been able to then eradicate the backlog with regards to those employers that are flagged for audit. If there are any employers that are still flagged for audit now, those are employers that would have submitted their return of earnings recently, but we don't have those instances where employers would have been waiting for months or years without getting any correspondence from us in terms of what documentation they need to submit to complete the audit. We have also firmed up our deliverables with IES in terms of assisting with inspections and enforcement. One of the issues that had been raised by the AG was around the lack of enforcement of employers who are not complying with the COID Act. And also we've done some work with the with CIPC as well as UIF to assist with, especially where we're doing investigations with employers who are flagged for audit, and also where we're looking at comparison of databases. So we have done some extensive work there, and we've picked up some of those variances, which we then also have reported to the CIPC. Some of them is exceptions that we are managing as part of our day-to-day business now. And we also done some activities around accounting of revenue in terms of estimation processes. Though there is still some based on the audit outcomes in the current year, there is some additional work that we still need to do around estimations, which we also then have adopted as additional actions going forward. When we look at some of the issues that we have had not completed at the end of December, so we wanted to also develop the, so one of the issues was that where we do estimate, where employers have not submitted their returns, yet these employers are registered with the fund. There is an accounting process that we expected to do in terms of raising estimations for these employers through the provisions for the assessments that are not raised. The accounting process for this was not correct as per the accounting standards, in that all the revenue that was submitted by employers subsequent to the provisions being raised would not be knocked off against the provision, but rather would be accounted for as revenue in the current year, because the provision would have been reversed at the beginning of the financial year. Now, that's not how correctly we're supposed to deal with it, because once we've raised the provision, this is revenue that we're accounting for. And when there is any revenue that gets collected eventually after the provision has been raised, we need to be able to knock off against the provision. That's the correct accounting process. So we have then started the process to review the whole process, the way that the system has been configured to deal with these provisions for assessment. So this was not completed at the end of December, including also the splitting of revenue, because currently the system doesn't allow for employers who submit return of earnings for multiple years, particularly if they had not been complying in prior years, and they want to submit those in a current financial year. As opposed to accounting for all this revenue in the current year, there needs to be some splitting of the revenue between the different financial years. And there was enhancements that we needed to do on the current SEP ECC system that we're using for revenue. And what we have seen is that this is not doable in the SEP ECC environment, because it would require us to redo the whole configuration of the entire SEP ECC system. But what we're then doing is to incorporate this in the enhancements that we're doing on CompEasy, because we will be migrating all our revenue functions into CompEasy to make sure that we have one integrated system for both claims as well as levies that we collect from employers. Also, the other issues, one of the other issues that we had been dealing with that had been flagged by the AG, was around the completeness of third-party recoveries that we collect. So where employers, where an employee gets injured as a result of a motor vehicle accident, the process is that the compensation fund would assess the claim and pay the claim. Where the person also successfully submits a claim to the road accident fund, the portion of the claim that has been paid by the fund is then recoverable from the road accident fund, and the road accident fund then pays the excess back to the injured person. So the where doubts around the completeness, especially around the recovery as well, because we know that there has been the debt book from road accident fund was a bit excessive, and we were not so active and proactive in terms of recovery of those. We have a built-in capacity in the CompEasy system to enable us to be able to isolate motor vehicle accident claims, so that we can proactively inform road accident fund of the motor vehicle accidents, so that when they do process the claims, we're then able to recover the money. And lastly, one of the other issues that we had not completed at the end of December was then to start dealing with the prior errors. One of the activities that was here that you'll see when I report later on was the whole analysis of the prior period errors dating back 10 years ago, so that we can have some specific actions in each of the categories. And some of those activities relating to revenue on prior period errors had not been finalized at the end of December. So this is ongoing work. The DG in his introductory remarks spoke about the resources that we've brought on board from the private sector on the finance side to try and help us to address these issues much quicker than we are at current moment. So one of the issues they will be dealing with are all these prior period issues that had been flagged in previous audits. We go to the next slide. The next slide is around benefits. So there's another category where we had about 74 actions in the action plan in total. And out of these 74 actions, about 66 of the actions are the actions that were due in by December, and only about 8 were due after December. Out of these 66, about 56 we completed, which makes up about 85% of the total activities that were due in December, and about 10 were still in progress. And that's about, makes up about 15%. If you go to the next slide, it then just provides the details. So we have done a lot here, and the DG spoke about the system that we've implemented, which has helped us to address a number of the root causes that led to disclaimers on the benefit side. However, there is still a lot of work that we still need to do, particularly with regards to implementation of preventative, as well as improving some of the automated controls that we have in place. So there was a lot of activities that we had. One of the issues was around the overpayments, particularly where we had invoices either where they are overpaid as a result of overbilling by an employer or by errors on the processing side. There wasn't any automated process on our side to make sure that we recover those. And we do inform those that have been overpaid and have processes also to be able to recover from subsequent payments. So we have implemented the subrogation process on CompEasy. It is an ongoing function, and where such instances do occur, we're able then to be able to subrogate those invoices and recover the money from future payments. We've also dealt with issues around advance payments that we had been tracking that had been raised by the AG, I think from the year 2012, around the advanced payments that were made by the fund in 2012 to a number of healthcare providers. And these had then led to them being classified as a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we have been able to recover from two of the service providers, and this process has been completed. And with the other service providers, we have litigation that is ongoing. We also have been able to finalize the account verification system, which is one of the things that we also had included as part of the preventative controls. And this system has been in effect from the 1st of October. We also have done a number of system controls and reports that we've developed and built. On the system, we've also improved the segregation processes in terms of segregation of duties to make sure that where there is processing of medical claims, we have multiple people looking at invoices to ensure that there is adequate controls. We've also looked at the issues around the Active Directory to deal with issues of fraud and corruption. And we've cleaned up the Active Directory to make sure that those that are in the system and that are using the system are only those that are still active employees of the Department of Employment and Labor. We also have started a process of vetting of medical service providers. And this process is now also a process that we run through an appointed provider that then helps us to make sure that the service providers that are in the company system are indeed genuine healthcare providers, if they're healthcare providers. And then these do qualify in terms of relevant legislation in the country to be able to bill for medical expenses. And there are some activities that were still not completed, and a large number of those activities related to enhancements that we needed to do on the systems. Having stabilized the implementation of CompEasy, we had identified a number of areas that we needed where we could still improve controls. And so there were enhancements that we had identified there. One of them was also where we needed to flag the system so that we're proactive in identifying possible duplicate invoices submitted by medical providers. So to avoid instances where when the AG does their CATs, they then identify exceptions and then they give us the exceptions to be able to respond to those exceptions. And we found that while some of those exceptions are explainable exceptions, what may appear to be a duplicate may not be a duplicate, but we needed to make sure that we proactively identify this so that we can also then be able to give those to the AG so that when they do their CATs, they already can minimize the amount of inquiries that they're making with us to explain some of those exceptions. So we needed to build those reports. So this was still in progress. And also we needed to reconcile some of the old duplicate payments that had been identified by the AG, as well as some of those country orders, in terms of having a proper reconciliation to know what has been recovered, what has been paid. and from what has been paid, what is it that is recoverable from those that we had litigated against. So that process also was a bit slow. With the resources that we have now on board, these reconciliations are going to then take place earnestly. We also looked at issues around over and above issues of reports to combat things or issues related to fraud and corruption. We also needed to improve the physical security controls around our buildings as well as in the data center, as we found that in some instances of fraud, the attack would then come through physical breaches as well as breaches on the data center. So we have some activities that we had not completed with regards to these physical security controls. If you go to the next slide. Let's just continue some of the activities that we have. I've already touched on a number of these activities at a high level. Let's continue some of those activities that we've completed on the benefit side. If you go to the next slide, the provisions for outstanding claims. We had one activity. Now these are, at the end of the financial year, we required in terms of the accounting standards to provide for claims that would have been incurred by 31st March of that financial year, and either have not been reported to us by employers or would have been reported by employers, but would not have finalized the claims based on information that has been submitted. We then need to do an actuarial estimate of what is the value of these claims and what is the impact of these claims on the financials. We then account for these as under the claims in the income statement of the fund. So there were some issues that had been raised, particularly because of the disclaimers that the AG had on the benefits, and automatically then that would also then give some disclaimers on the provisions for the outstanding claims. And also there is some activities that were identified that we needed to do to help improve the credibility of the provisions that we're making on the outstanding claims. So of the activities that were reportable in December, we had one. And we completed that. And one of the that activity, if you go to the next slide, was mainly around getting a new actuary appointed and to start the work of cleaning up the provisions that we have currently in the balance sheet. We're sitting with about 11 billion rands of provisions that are sitting in the balance sheet. And we need to then to prove the authenticity of those provisions based on the actuarial work. So some of the subsequent activities that we're reporting in the 2022 would be the work that these actuaries will be doing with the fund to get the provisions for the outstanding claims correctly done. If you go to the next slide. Okay, these are payables from non-exchange transactions. And our payables from non-exchange transactions, these are benefits that we pay. And these are classified as such in the balance sheet of the fund, particularly those that would be outstanding at the end of March when we do the financial statements. This would be classified as payables from non-exchange transactions. And there were some issues, mainly because of the issues that are in the benefit side. Those would also then impact on the accounting side, which is on the payables on the balance sheet. So we had about four actions, and all four of them were due in December 2021. And here we were targeting to make sure that these issues, when we do report for 31st March 2022, these issues related to payables from non-exchange transactions are addressed, so that we then don't have these issues recurring in the audit reports for the 2022 financial year. If you go to the next slide then just explains some of these issues. One was the issues around reconciliations. What we needed to make sure that one of the issues that the AG always raises was around the fact that they would not get reliable reports that would support the figures that we show on the balance sheet, as well as the figures that we show on the income statement with regards to benefits. And what we needed to put in place was the reconciliations of submodules against the GL. With the implementation of CompEasy, it provided us with a much better way of reporting benefits, because in the previous system, we had two systems that were integrated, and with the finance system in particular lacked the necessary submodule. So we paid benefits, we processed benefits from the operating system, and these benefits would then be integrated directly to the general ledger for them to be paid. And once they're in the general ledger, it would become difficult to try and reconcile those two to the reports that we're producing from the system. And that's one of the things that led to the AG disclaiming some of the payables that we had. Now with the CompEasy system, we have an integrated system that is one. Claims are processed and paid in the same system. We have the processing side of the system. We've got the sub-modules. We also then have the GL. We're able to make sure that what is in the sub-GL reconciles with what has been processed on the other side and also reconciled with the value that we are reflecting on the general ledger. And also we needed to make sure that we get the full listings of all the claims and making sure that the listings of the claims agrees 100% to what is reflecting on the annual financial statements. And also we needed to do some analytical work that I highlighted earlier to look at all the prior issues that had been raised by the AG in the past. So in as much as we've now implemented the required controls on the CompEasy system, there is still a need for us to go back to the previous issues that had been raised, particularly those that had an impact on the financial statement, to make sure that we clear and clean those. Otherwise, the disclaimer would not disappear because we would then be carrying things from the past that are now still reflected in the balance sheet of the fund, because we account for our financial transactions on accrual basis as opposed to a cash basis, where you then forget about everything that happened in the past and focus only on what happened in the current year. The only activity that we had not finalized was also to get the, while we've resolved the problem on CompEasy, we wanted to see if we cannot also then resolve the problem on the old system, because we still carry a lot of financial transactions in that system. And those transactions are part of the balances that we have in the current, in the balance sheet now. So we then needed to get an analyst to work with the finance team to extract all the items that are sitting in the system, to do some analytical work so that we can then do the categorization of all these financial information per each of the financial year and try to agree it to those financial statements that we've produced in the past. So that is the activity that we could not finalize. The resources are on board now, and this is the activity that will be taking place throughout the course of 2022. We will have a new due date for this activity because it's quite extensive. Part of the resources that we have brought on board are also going to assist us on the finance side to get this activity completed, which is something that we will complete by the end of this year. Go to the next slide. The next slide is under, I think there's two categories relating to investments. So the first one was under consolidation. So one of the things that we've reported in the last 3 years has been that the unlisted investments, or those investments that the fund had earmarked for job creation, in 2018, the AG indicated that these investments do meet requirements of being associates, and as such, we then need to account for them differently as opposed to the way that we are accounting for them up until then, where we were just accounting for the investment values in the balance sheet. We now needed to consolidate these assets in the financial statements, which is something that has different accounting requirements. And for the last 2 years, we have been struggling to get these completely done, particularly because we could not get financial statements of all the companies, because some of these companies have year ends that coincide with our year end, and their audit requirements process would still be ongoing at the time when we have to prepare and submit our financial statements for audit. In some of the cases, the financial years would not match with ours, and would only be post our audit process, which would then make it difficult for us to be able to use audited figures to consolidate these financials. And these are some of the things that then caused problems for the fund. We had about three actions that we wanted to complete early on in 2021. All three of them were due by December. So we could complete one, and the other two activities had not been completed. And I'll just reflect on those in the next slide. If you go to the next slide. Go to the next slide, Matapelo. So if we look at these, so the first one was what we completed was to address the issue of the mandate. To stop investing in these social responsible investments until we've sorted out the reporting issues that we needed to sort out with the PIC and have a process in place that would enable us to report on these investments correctly as required. And the two that we could not is, the first one was, we then decided that we needed to appoint service providers through the Public Investment Corporation to do the audit on our behalf, the high-level review, because what the AG would say is that the financial statements that you're using to consolidate these associates in your financial statements, we want to have assurance that you have at least reviewed and you have ascertained and made sure that the information that you're reporting is complete, accurate, and is verifiable. So one of the things that for this, we then had to rely on the audited financial statements of these companies. But with the activities that we had identified, we were then going to appoint our own service providers through the PIC. They would then do these high-level reviews for us on a regular basis. And we then get these management accounts from these companies so that by the end of the financial year, we have reviewed all 12 management accounts of these companies, and we can reliably use that information for consolidation so that at the time when they do produce their audited report, there isn't major differences between what they have given to us and what has been produced. So these companies, we had finalized the appointment process, but we had not finalized the contracting at the end of December. That's the reason why we missed the deadline. And they also were going to help us also with evaluations. One of the issues that the AG had raised was also that the financial statements that the PIC valuators are using to do valuation of these investments is based on IFRS, which is the International Financial Reporting Standards, whereas the fund prepares its financial statements in line with the generally recognized accounting practices, which is the public sector accounting standards. We needed to convert these financial statements to public sector standards and then do valuation based on that. And these are the valuations that we needed to make sure that we do the valuations for all the investments using these scrap statements. So we had not finalize this because this is linked to these service providers that I spoke about. Now that we finalize in the contracting, we'll then be able to do both the valuations this year in May when we prepare the financials, as well as having done some high-level reviews of financial statements before we incorporate them into our financial statements. We go to the next slide. The next slide is... So on the next slide is also relating to investment in financial assets. In that particular area also, that's the first area was dealing with the consolidations. Now this one deals with all investments in the fund, both listed and unlisted. And we had about 7 actions there. All 7 of them were due in December. We could complete 5 by end of December, and 2 of them were still in progress at the end of December. And when we look at some of those that we finalized and completed was the revision of the mandate that I spoke about earlier on, and also the assessment of the current structure and investment to determine if we are adequately capacitated and look at whether are we able to bridge it by appointing a service provider, or we need to have permanent resources. We then did the assessment, and in terms of the assessment, we are then bridging the gap through the appointment of a service provider. But as part of the organizational architecture review that the minister has ordered, that is going to take place both on the compensation fund and the UIF, they will then look at also the adequacy of the investment structures that we have in the fund, look at what is the adequate ones that we need to have to effectively manage our investments. And also, we also then needed to make sure that some kind of set some kind of requirements that we could use for the PIC to comply with in terms of those investee companies, so that we can see before we even get the reports whether these companies are headed for distress or not. One of the issues that the AG had raised in the briefing to the committee was around the fact that some of these investments that we do have get impaired, and there isn't any proactive work to make sure that we address this issue. So we then requested covenants from the PIC that they had with each of these investee companies, and they expected them to report on these on a monthly basis or on a quarterly basis when they submit quarterly performance reports, and we're able to then proactively see where we're headed for for trouble, and if we need to intervene to get them to intervene and get processes in place to make sure that some of these companies don't end up being impaired or getting distressed, we're then able to do so through the investment committee of the board. We also then instituted some monthly management meetings with the PIC to proactively deal with all the issues that usually are highlighted when we, or that we pick up when we're preparing financial statements at year end. Some of the things that we had not done, completed, was the issue of the implementing the outcome. So of the assessment of the structures, I indicated this is going to be part of the architecture review that is being done on the whole configuration of the compensation fund. And also the one that we had not completed was the amending the SLA that we have with the PIC to include penalties where there's non-compliance or non-performance. And this is mainly to help us deal with issues around where we need information from the PIC and we don't get it on time. When it comes to preparing financial statements. So the SLA has been drafted and finalized. It is currently sitting with the PIC and their legal team, and we should then be finalizing that as soon as we've received the feedback from the PIC, which is should be now in the month of Feb. If we go to the next slide. The next slide was around the prior period errors. So we had about three actions that we were targeting, and two of them were due or reportable in December. And we completed all two of them. If you go to the next slide, it just shows what those are. We then needed to do a detailed analysis, as I indicated, going back 10 years, all the audit reports, and look at what all the prior period issues that had been raised and errors that had been raised by the AG, and develop a guideline on to management on how we then going to deal with each of these prior period errors. Management, together with the team that we've just brought on board, is now going to be actioning these results of this analysis, as well as the guideline, implementing this guideline that we've put in place for dealing with this prior period errors. You go to the next slide. The next slide is contingencies. Under contingencies, we then had, so these are also related to litigation that we then have to report where there's possible financial implication out of the litigations or out of even the fraud investigations. We then need to do to create some liabilities on the financial statements on the balance sheet. And out of the, we have about six actions that we are targeting by end of the implementation of financial plan, of the action plan, and six of them were due in December, and we implemented about five, and one of them was not completed at the end of December. If you go to the next slide. So part of those that things that we were able to complete was, one, we enhanced the legal case management system, which is the system that our legal services team uses to track and all the litigations. We have basically enhanced that so that we can then start to be able to scan also some of the litigation documents onto the system, so that at the time when we have to submit the information for audit or even have to quantify the potential contingent liability related to those litigations, we're then able to just extract the information from the system as opposed to having to ask for information from the state attorney and experiencing delays. So that system was finalized, the enhancement was finalized. We also looked at, we needed to conduct reviews and quality checks on the system, and this way was also done. We also then needed to do a reconciliation of the liability. So here we needed to then look at the liabilities that we provide for pensions to make sure that both the short-term and the long-term portion of the of these liabilities is equal to the liability that we have recorded on our financial statements. One of the findings that had been raised by the AG in prior periods, and we needed to make sure that with CompEase this is completely addressed. And also the one of the things that we had asked the CFO to do was to look at the different items that contributes to this liability. We then needed to document so that he creates a document that shows what is the expected information that needs to be reported on a monthly basis and submitted to support the information that we're carrying in our financial statements, so that at year end, when the financial statements are prepared, the CFO and the team don't have to be running around looking for information from legal services, and legal services also then running around looking for that information from the state attorney, as we've seen that the impact of the system downtime that the Department of Justice had last year when we were finalizing the financial statement meant that we could not get any information from the state attorney, nor any confirmations of what litigations they, we have. And as a result, we had to then spend more time verifying the information and before we could prepare it to the AG. In some of the cases, we then end up giving the information very late to the AG in the audit process. So we want to proactively make sure that we keep this information. And if though the AG wants to do verification externally with the Department of Justice, in an event that they're not able to do so, we want to have some compensating mechanism for them to do the verification, even though it would not have been an external verification that they wanted, but it would have addressed the risk to some extent. The only outstanding item that we had not done was the reconciliation between the state attorney offices all over the country, as well as the state attorney here at National, with the litigation that we have on our register. So that's the process that is ongoing. We have to finish this process by the end of the financial year so that when the CFO starts the process for the preparation of annual financial statements, we've already done the reconciliation and what we're reporting in our financial statements would then be deemed to be correct. If you go to the next slide, around irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there were about 12 actions that we were targeting here. And the main issues around our fruitless and wasteful expenditure from the audit point of view has been around completeness and accuracy of this, rather than non-compliance. So one of the issues that we had been tracking was the about 12 actions that we tracked out of the total action plan. And 11 of these actions were due for reporting in December 2021. And one was only after the December 2021. So we have been able to implement 8 of these, which makes up about 73%, and 3 of them were not complete as at the end of December 2021. If you go to the next slide then just shows the activities, a lot of the activities that we have implemented. One of the issues of we needed to finalize the permanent structure for the internal control unit. This is a unit within the office of the CFO, which helps the CFO to manage the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure registers, and also start implementing consequence management with regards to any irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure that is incurred, and making sure that we then hold different managers to account for consequence management, as well as we have established a committee that we call Financial Misconduct Advisory Committee, which then deals with all fruitless and wasteful expenditure cases, and they make recommendations to management on what actions or what must be done on, and confirm instances of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we also implemented a bit stricter turnaround times in terms of implementing any of the resolutions that come out of the committee, implemented and updated our standard operating procedures with clear timeframes so that we can, everybody knows what is expected and what needs to be done. And also we targeted some of the high value cases as well to make sure that we get those dealt with by the committee, as well as with the necessary action that needs to be taken. So one of the things that we had not, one of the things that we had targeted and that we did not complete, and this is largely due to the fact that while we finalized the appointments, but to get the confirmations and the all the necessary documentation from the those that we appointed, the additional resources that we going to be part of the Financial Misconduct Committee through getting external members, we have finalized those appointments now. The committee met for the first time in January. I think by December, end of December, this had not been finalized because we were waiting for them to finalize the appointment process on their side. And also we needed to appoint a service provider to do investigations, particularly where we need in-depth investigations. We previously reported to the committee that some of the items that are on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure date back years. And when we do look for information internally, we don't find any of the information that helps us to be able to first confirm whether this indeed is a genuine fruitless and wasteful expenditure or an irregular expenditure. And secondly, get the necessary documentation that would enable us to know who we must then hold to account for this irregular expenditure, and if it's not, then start a process to get approval from the DG to remove it from the registers and write it off. So this was not done. We also wanted to appoint additional resources that would then augment capacity within the internal control unit to deal with this voluminous register. This was not done in December. We actually stopped that when we were making headway with the appointment of the external resources that the DG referred to earlier on that are assisting our finance unit to deal with these issues. So they also then will be taking this as part of the responsibility to help us clear and clean these registers. If you go to the next slide. So there were other administrative matters that also had been highlighted in the audit reports as well as in the briefing by the AG to both the committee as well as to SCOPA. So we also developed action plans around some of those findings that contributed to those administrative matters that had been raised. There are about 26 actions out of this, and 20 of them were due before December 2021, and 6 of these were due after December 2021. So we were able to complete about 19, which makes up about 95% of these activities. And about one of these was completed, which makes up about 5% of the activities. If you go to the next slide, it just gives the details. The I think one of these issues was around some other important matters. Metabel. Next slide. So on the other important matters, we having the issues around the, if you go to the next slide, the asset register. So this related to findings that we got on asset registers, making sure that the correct calculation of the depreciation, the calculating values in line with CREF standards. We did some enhancements then on SAP to make sure that we get the complete register there. We also then also did some kind of monthly status report of employee relations cases relating to the clean audit exco on a monthly basis. So this was to address the issues around consequence management and also defining standards. One of the issues that the AG had raised was the amount of time it takes to finalize disciplinary cases. So we then have to define some standards that we can then use when we appoint presiding officers for some of these disciplinary cases, then they know what the turnaround times and the standard time frames are for finalizing and deal with misconduct cases, though it's not always possible to meet some of these because especially of the delays and postponements that take place, but the guidelines are then helping us fast track this much quicker. We also have some engagements with the DDG Corporate Services at the department because most of the disciplinary cases relating to any employees that are employed in the provincial offices. We then get assistance of discipline through the department, and some of these escalations have then been done to the DDG Corporate Services, who then also assisted to get the officials in head office at the department to assist the provinces to fast track some of these cases. We also had about 41 cases that we're tracking from previous audit reports that were part of the consequence management. As at end of December, we had about 8 of these cases out of 41 that had still been, that were still ongoing, that has still not been completed out of the 41. We also wanted to appoint an external panel of external labor relations officers to assist us, because both the fund and the department, we don't have adequate capacity to be able to deal with the volume of cases, particularly as we try and clean up the fruitless and wasteful expenditure register, as we deal with the outcomes of some of the fraud investigations that are taking place. We then need a temporary capacity to make sure that we still meet the turnaround times that we've now adopted for finalizing these cases. So that process is still en route. It has not been finalized as yet. If you go to the next slide, so on slide 28, some of the things, there's things that we had then looked at as part of the key considerations for improving the control environment further. And we had identified about 9 actions. And out of these, 7 of them were due for reporting in December 2021. 2 were after December 2021. So we were able to complete about 5 of these, which make up about 71%. And 2 of them were still in progress, were not complete yet. If you go to the next slide, part of the communicating standards, also implementing standards for disciplinary cases, but also then turnaround times around when, how we communicate the outcomes of the sanctions coming out of the disciplinary processes to short, we reduce the timeframes there. And also we escalated cases that had been submitted to the DDG Corporate Services to assist with fast tracking some of these. I think I spoke about these earlier on. I think I'll end my presentation there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mafata. Members, there is a presentation. Any questions?
Dinner, please, Jay. I raised my hand, but I'm not sure if you can see it.
Over to you, Honorable Dana. Then after you, it will be Honorable Mkhonto. After Honorable Mkhonto, it will be Honorable Kado. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My first question is with regards to slide 9. Under the bullet points, I think it's the 6th bullet point, it refers to actions that have been completed, finalized FDS and the AVS project, including verification on Comp Easy, with the exception of reporting on bank detail amendments, and then which is obviously in progress. Next to that, under the 4th bullet point, it's indicated that that is the onboarding of the banking services. Sorry, let me just get the slide in front of me. Onboarding of the banking service provider to leverage off their controls on banking verification. With regards to that, I take it this is in relation to the notice that was published in the Government Gazette last year on the 19th of October. I would like to know what the status of this notice is, as well as, and I know there was a number of submissions made about this notice. I would like to know how many submissions were made and if the compensation fund is still in the process of vetting these submissions. Is there any feedback on this? When can the committee expect, and the public, of course, expect the outcome of these submissions? And then also, Chair, I remember we received a letter from the Chair of Quadlink, Mr. Nkadimeng, last year, and we postponed that to this year. So I'd like to know when and whether or not the committee is going to discuss that letter, which is also a submission on the notice that was published last year in October in the Government Gazette. And then my last question is with regards to slide 29. In progress, which is not completed, is indicated the conclusion on all long outstanding ER cases. I'd like to know how many ER cases are outstanding and whether or not there's a timeline on the completion of these cases. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mkhonto.
Thank you, Chair. There are actions according to the plan that were supposed to be completed by December 2021. And according to the report, their completion has not yet reached 100%. I'm not getting from the report as to when are they going to be completed, if we can be informed as to those that were supposed to be completed in December, when are they going to be completed? And in some, I did not understand as to what led to them not completed. Chair, I hope that the action plan will lead to even addressing the issue of the 86 million, more than 86 million that the AG spoke about. That one of the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And then according to the presentation, the Finance Misconduct Committee is going to be reconstructed. But then who is responsible for that? Because I don't think that we can give the compensation fund to be a player, a referee, a lineman, and a player this time around. Because we are having 10 years of this adverse and findings by the AG. So who is responsible for the reconstruction of the Finance Misconduct Committee? Because I would love to see a committee that is not biased and will be up to the work given to them. The last one, Chair, will be that one of the Gazette. I think the Honorable Dana has addressed it. Maybe if we can get an answer as to how far is the process, when is the committee going to get the feedback on that one? Thank you.
Chair, can I go ahead?
Yes, Honourable Cardo, it's your turn.
Thanks, Chair. My question on the notice has largely been covered by Honourable Denner, but I did want to ask the Commissioner about the gaps in the relationship between the Compensation Fund and the PIC, in particular, why it's necessary to have prior notice of impairments, and also if you could inform the committee exactly how much the compensation fund has got invested with the PIC. Thank you.
Thank you. In the absence of other hands, may I then request the commissioner to respond? Mr. Mafata?
Chair allows, I'm going to respond to some of the questions and I'm going to ask my team to just add to some of the responses, particularly Ms. Reuters and Mr. Kota on the PIC question. Chair, so the issue of the AVS, so we have implemented account verification system as from the 1st of October, as I indicated. So the notice already published was more around us enforcing the non-payment into nominated accounts so that we minimize exceptions that we pick up out of the account verification system and to improve also the, or to deal with issues of fraud and interception of payments by unscrupulous parties. So we have, while we've implemented it, we've basically given the notice, we've received the comments. from the notices. We then currently studying, we've received a lot of notices. Ms. Reuters will just highlight how many they are. But in the main, I think there's two that we've received which are quite substantive from two third party providers who are mainly affected by this. I must state that the issue of the account verification benefits the beneficiaries, but it's impacting on two third party providers who then have submitted extensive legal commentary on the AVS, and we together with our legal team are then looking at it. And we'll then study all the what we've received and based on it. So the impact of the notice is that currently where there's exceptions, we're then managing those exceptions. And after having looked at those exceptions, then pay based on the analysis that we've done. But with the full implementation, it would then mean that any exception would not be entertained and the company would be correct. Thank you, Dieter.
Okay.
So what we're trying to do with the appointing a new service provider on the banking side and enhancing some of the controls, we're actually trying to do much more than just account verification, because there's multiple things that you can do to safeguard payments of beneficiaries. So we then want to leverage on those. So that's why in our quest to then appoint a new banking provider, we're looking at beyond just account verification, because with the current banking provider, we then only have account verification as a preventative, as a fraud preventative mechanism, but we're trying to do much more. Ms. Reuters will then just comment on how many that we've received, and we should complete this by end of February or so, and then we should be then in a position to know and advise the DG on what should be the way forward with the enforcing of the account verification system. With the completed activities, so I indicated that some of those, so we're going to have some where, because of dependencies, a lot of the activities that we haven't completed, as you would see, they are largely centered around procurement processes and also system enhancements. The ones that are related to procurement processes, those we'll be able to complete. Some we've already completed end of January, and we should be able to complete those end of Feb. But the ones that are related to the systems, we will be extending some of the deadlines, because these are related to, these are proved to be quite extensive. And with the short period of time that we had set ourselves, it became impractical for us to be able to complete those. So we are looking at what would be those revised dates that we then would request the DG to approve. The FinMec, we have reconstituted the FinMec. We were, particularly when we're reconstituting it, we're trying to address the same concern that Honorable Mkonto has raised around the fund being a referee and a player. So the reconstitution then largely, and the DG is then appoint the members of the Financial Misconduct Committee. We're trying to then make sure that this committee doesn't comprise of internal people, but it's made up of external parties that would then objectively look at each of the cases and make recommendations to the DG on what should be the actions that we need to take on each of these actions. So we have then done that to address this issue of the fund being a referee and a player. The relationship with the PIC, I think maybe just responding to the issue of impairments. I think one of the issues that, so whenever we invest the workers' money. So if an investment is made and that investment results in that investment losing value, that is a loss on the part of the assets that we have in the fund. So if there is any possibility that an asset may be impaired and so on, we need to know beforehand so that if there is any monitoring and intervention that we would want the PIC to make, we can proactively say so, as opposed to us picking those things up only in the valuation reports at the end of the financial year when the impairment has already taken place and there's very little that you can then try to intervene on. So I'll ask Mr. Gota just to speak to the issue of the, just to respond to the size of the investments as at end of December, where we're sitting at, and Ms. Reuters will then come in and speak to the issue of the submissions that we've received from the public with regard to the notice that we published in October on account verification. Mr. Gota.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, honorable members. Morning, Deputy Minister, DG, and the colleagues. The answer in terms of the size of the investment, as of 31st March 2021, the compensation fund invested 80.5 billion with PIC. And currently, as of 31st of December 2021, the amount was sitting at about 85 billion rands. Thank you. And maybe to add in terms of the issue of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, in addition to the external members who will be looking at these instances of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Auditor General will audit all actually the items that has come in the register, including non-compliance issues, where they pick them up and when they are monitoring and doing audit work on supply chain processes. They will also look if we have condoned and removed those instances rightfully and following all the prescripts. Thank you, honorable members.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, Honourable Members, the Deputy Minister, the DG, and colleagues. With regard to the comments that we have received for the notice that we have issued, we've received a total of 75 comments. We are currently working through the comments and involving our legal services, and we anticipate that we will be finalized those comments towards the end of the month, and we will then give the necessary feedback to the DG and then determine based on the comments whether we are going to continue with what we've placed in the notice or we are going to make some amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, maybe if I can just ask also, Ms. There was a question I did not respond to relating to the number of disciplinary cases, how much we have. So Ms. Mklungu can just maybe just add on it. I know the ones that we were tracking that were part of the action plan are those that relate to prior investigations, which was about 41, and where we had about 8 that were still not finalized. But you can then be able to give a comprehensive response on it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, Chair. Yes, it's afternoon now. And honorable members, Deputy Minister, DG, and then senior management of the department. With the 8 cases of the disciplinary cases that we're still outstanding, we've made a significant improvement for the month of January. We are now sitting at having 5 cases that are still outstanding, which will be finalized by end of next month, which is end of March, because it's not the cases that we still have to start from scratch. Two of them are still waiting for the verdict from the chairperson, and one the appreciation award. And one was finalized, however, an employee has lodged a dispute, and we have 2 that are still underway, which I think it's safely so to say by end of next month of March, we'll be able to finalize them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I haven't seen any other hands. There's one area which I would like to clarify to members. The issue of a letter that was written by Mr. Nkadimeng. If my memory serves me well, in the last meeting I did respond to that matter, and the response from the office of the chair was to the committee. We can't then, Mr. Nkadimeng is questioning the processes and the issue that is in relation to what was tabled when we were dealing with the amendments in our public hearings. Now that we are done with that, any party has got that right to want to question some of the things. But our responsibility is to refer the person to the process that is going to take place within the MCOP. And I have checked with the department to the PLO. The public hearings are taking place from the 22nd of February. And we will again, I will request Mr. Sakaza and the department PLO to revert back to Mr. Katimeng and advise him that he must go to that end table what he is not satisfied with in that process, because we can't reopen. That means everybody who has got something, we are done with it. The House approved that there were the amendments, and the amendments are then, through the rules, have then been sent to NCOP for the NCOP to have its own process, and everybody in terms of the stakeholders are allowed to can go and pursue and whatever they think that they are not comfortable with on how and what then was the response of the department at that time. So I want to advise members, and I'm not quite sure. I would have thought that all the returning members in the committee will assist the office of the chair in understanding that that is then the situation. So I now there's nothing that the committee can do for now until that process of the NCOP is completed. We'll hear what then will then be the recommendations of that process. If NCOP has recommended otherwise, is saying that we must look into that, then we'll then have to do that. But for now, there's nothing that we can do. I hope honorable members will understand. I thought at the time when I explained it, honorable members understood what I said. That is the process of dealing with a bill which has not yet been enacted by the president. If there are no other questions in relation to the presentation, thank you very much, Mr. Mafata. And we, DG, any comments before we, is the DG still around?
I am here, Chair.
Any comments?
Chair, thanks very much. I think from our side, just to make a point that we determined to engage everybody in all the changes that we're making at the compensation fund. However, there's one fundamental principle that we will not shy away from. The changes that we are making from the compensation fund were necessitated by the issues that were identified by AG. And it is our responsibility as a department to make sure that we address those issues. And in the process of doing that, a number of the stakeholders that that transact with the compensation fund are going to be affected. And as I indicated earlier on, we engage with everybody. And unfortunately, some of the decisions that we're taking are not going to be liked by people that we're transacting with. We have to make those decisions anyway. And we will not be able to please everybody. we're doing all these things for the benefit of the organization and for the benefit of the people that are supposed to be serviced by the compensation fund. It is not for the benefit of the service providers. So I just wanted to make that point, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sakaza, can you go on the last agenda item? Can you put it on for the committee, which is the committee program? Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable members, we'll see that that is our program. We were here today, and those who are continuing next week, up Mr. Sakaza, we are continuing next week. And can you go up again? I think if you can stop there, can you go up a bit and you will end there, up. Okay. Remember that as members, we have been consistently raising our concern, our discomfort in terms of not really being able to be aware or be fully briefed on this added mandate, which is called employment in this term. And there was then a resolution taken in the last meeting before we rise that the Minister of Employment and Labour is to come and brief the committee. And when the date was then identified by the Office of the Chair, circulated to the ministry, they came back and said, can we be accorded some more time? Because this is not just an issue that we can just can table, respond, and whatever. We need to gather very much information with the understanding that it's a matter that we have been saying all along. In agreeing to the, after consultation with the opposition parties, we agreed that it must be postponed, but that postponement is not going to go beyond end of February. We said that categorically clear to the ministry, and that is why then the date is the 23rd. That date is, should I say, cast in stone in terms of this matter. But Deputy Minister, we are not taking this beyond the 23rd. I'm also requesting that all members please diarise that Wednesday of the 23rd, so that we are then going to be able to address this matter. I was just saying, you know, this issue of the pandemic is quite a challenge because it's one of those issues, those presentations that one would have loved that they be physical. Then on the 23rd, I'm sorry, on the 1st to the 2nd of March, we are going to have a strike plan. We are still communicating with the powers to be because we would like to do that physical. We are allowed, we can identify any place, any province, any town, wherever. So we are still it's pending the approval. The others, I think, are straightforward. We are to, Mr. Sakaza Nyuka, we are to, we're having an oversight on the 28th, so the 1st of April, we'll be having an oversight we are still going to have a pending an approval from the chief whip and the house chair. But can I, for members to also, for transparency and whatever, the office of the chair has identified two provinces, but visiting two institutions, SEE. And the reason SEE is because we have to physically see what is happening there, because within that SEE is one of those branches of the or units of the Department of Employment and Labor that are critical and crucial in ensuring of the assisting of the economy, but also us having to really see and then be able to assert our authority in terms of departments utilize that in terms of whatever, furniture or in whatever, which is quite, it will be quite, in my view, it will be quite affordable, and it will also assist the finances of the country, but also assist this branch to be able to be on its feet. We know the challenges. I'm not going to go into that. In the last 2 years, we have been being presented with that. But in that, the Office of the Chair have also identified that we will go to it will be Gqeberha and Emonti, which is East London. But we will not only go there. We will then take an opportunity of visiting the labor centers in two of these towns, which is Gqeberha and East London. So I'm putting this so that if members have got an issue or have some other. And we put them here, we just look into those, and then so that when we apply, we don't have to come back. But in principle, that is what then the Office of the Chair would like to put on this. So when you are adopting this, because we are to adopt this program, I would appreciate if members can just reflect on that. The other issues, I think, are matters that are straightforward in our program. Week 10, I would appreciate if you can just reflect on that. Over to you, honourable members. In the absence of hands, honourable Mkhonto.
Thanks very much, Chair, for the detailed explanation of our program. Chair, it's just that I can't remember, but we once, as we once agreed about visiting SEEs, we also once touched the matter of visiting labor centers. I don't know whether that can be covered, or maybe we have to maybe identify as to which labor centers can be visited, maybe based on the complaints that we are receiving as committee members on the services and activities, complaints from the public.
Are you still on?
Yeah, no, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. We will visit labor centers in those two areas. We'll visit labor centers that are located in Pitso. we will either start with going to a labor center in East London, then go to the SEE. And then when we're in PE, when you're in Gqeberha, we'll go to the labor center in Gqeberha and go to the SEE, because both of these towns have SEE factories or whatever, but they've also got a labor centers. So we will, I reflect on that we will visit SEE and labor centers in both those areas. Thank you very much. Can we then get a formal mover of the program? I see.
Hello.
Honorable Makubela. I saw Honorable Makubela's hand.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, it's network where I am. I moved for the adoption of the program as it was presented.
Thank you. Can we get a seconder? Who is that one?
Nonsele.
Honorable Nonsele.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Honorable Nonsele, Mrs. Nonsele, I second the motion by Honorable Makubele for the adoption of the program as presented. With the amendments, Chair, as you have made the amendments with regard to the visits to the labor centers as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Anybody who has got any other counter review? No, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Members, DG. I think I'm sure you'll then get the program and the detailed itinerary when we are then preparing for that. Is the DM still around?
Yes, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, I'm here.
Okay, I can see the minister is not yet back. Any closing?
No, thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Actually, I thought by the time you adopting your minutes and other stuff, normally you would have released us at that point. But I want to thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members for all the input that we received from your Honorable Self. And we know that sometimes we don't respond adequately to some of the issues, but I think because of our relationship and our close proximity to the committee, I think now honorable members are ready if ever they don't feel satisfied about what we have presented, we can submit further inputs, maybe in writing from through the office of the DG. Or any outstanding information that might not necessarily have satisfied honorable members of the committee. So we are forever at your service, honorable members, and we try by all means and will continue to do better and do our work diligently and committing. We are committing ourselves to forever cooperate with the committee and whichever information that the committee is looking forward to, we are prepared to present. And thank you so much for this opportunity, honorable members.
Thank you very much, DM. And the chair didn't excuse you is because we are going for an oversight and the department and the ministry is to be aware that we are going for an oversight. So it was going to be important. And also you be as the ministry, be exposed to the program and as it is adopted. DG, the DM and DG, we will appreciate. I think we said it early when we in the first term, that when you are going to have programs in terms of how the Inspector General was outlining, which is quite a very, quite a very good program. Inform us so that members of the portfolio committee who are residing closer to this, to those areas, are then able to go and observe or participate, whatever. It's very important that we be exposed to those, so that when people or whoever wants to belittle or criticize the department, we are able to say we have been physically there. This is what has transpired. And we are able, when we monitor your reports, we are able to say, but we were there, this didn't take place, or this took place, why is it that it's not in the report? So that's why I think at that time, we requested that please just inform to the office of the secretary of that. But thank you very much. I think we saw those programs on TV. They were quite a good program. I know that you are short staffed, but thank you very much. And at least we are happy and confident that as the department, you are really doing your work. Having said that, honorable members, until we meet again next week, the committee stands adjourned. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much,
honorable members.
Hi, Uncle Mama. Bye bye.
Thank you. Michael, the junior, on the 10th, I want my chocolate.